from LPM.
Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
Kentucky's primary election day is Tuesday, May 17th. But early voting on a larger scale is underway this year thanks to a new law that allows Kentuckians to vote in person ahead of Election Day without having to provide an excuse. I'm Rick Howlett. Today on In Conversation, we'll preview some of the local, state, and federal races on the ballot with a team of journalists. City editor Amina Elahi and city reporter Roberto Roldan are with us from WFPL in Louisville, where Democrats and Republicans will pick their nominees to succeed outgoing Mayor Greg Fisher and for other offices. Ryland Barton from Kentucky Public Radio and Ohio Valley Resource will join us to talk about state, federal, and judicial races. It's all ahead this hour on In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. Welcome to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Rick Howlett in Louisville. Good to have you with us today. The polls are open for early voting at designated precincts across Kentucky for the state's primary election, which officially is next Tuesday, May 17th. There are many contested races on the Republican and Democratic ballot statewide. Here in Louisville, a lot of candidates running for mayor, and there's a competitive race on the Democratic side for the 3rd District Congressional seat that covers Louisville that will be vacant with the retirement of John Yarmuth in a heavily Democratic district. Two state lawmakers are among those vying for the seat. There's also a U.S. Senate primary for the seat currently held by Republican Rand Paul. Former Kentucky lawmaker Charles Booker of Louisville is among the Democrats trying to win his party's nomination to unseat Senator Paul. So we will talk about all that and more, and we're going to cheat a little bit toward the end of the program. We're talking about the primary election Tuesday, but there have been some developments this week in the governor's race and other statewide races in 2023, and we'll touch on those as well. I want to welcome our panel of reporters who will break down the ballots for us. Amina Elahi is the city editor at WFPL. Her coverage includes following the city's business and civic leaders and reporting on how their decisions affect local communities and, of course, coordinating the coverage of the city. Amina, good to have you back with us.
Thanks, Rick.
Roberto Roldan is with us. He is the city politics and government reporter for WFPL. His coverage focuses on a wide range of topics, including public policy, community initiatives, and holding Louisville Metro government accountable. And before joining WFPL, Roberto covered Richmond, Virginia City Hall for Virginia Public Media. Roberto, good to have you with us. Welcome to the program for the first time.
Thanks, Rick.
And you all know Ryland Barton, of course. He is the managing editor for Collaboratives here at WFPL. That includes Kentucky Public Radio and the Ohio Valley Resource. He's also been the Kentucky Public Radio Statehouse reporter and political reporter. Ryland, good to have you back.
Morning, Rick.
Later, we're going to be joined briefly by Christy Stevens from Louisville Center for Neighborhoods, which has created a voter information map that you'll find helpful, and we'll talk to her during our second segment. So let's start with the mayoral race here in Louisville. And Roberto, this is one of the most hotly contested mayoral elections in recent years because the current mayor, Greg Fisher, is not on the ballot. He has served his three terms. He's term limited, so he can't run again. There are hundreds of thousands of dollars being spent on the Democratic side of the race. Big field of candidates who have actual experience in local government and community work. A lot of money being spent again. So let's talk about the field. What are the candidates doing, especially those who don't have as much campaign money, doing to stand out in such a crowded field?
Yeah, Rick, I mean, I think you're spot on, right? There's no incumbent. This is the first time, I think, in 12 years that Greg Fisher's name isn't going to be on the ballot. So there's about a dozen people who are sort of trying to seize this moment and become the next mayor of Louisville. You know, you have Democrats and Republicans who are going to be in the mayoral primary coming up on May 17th. There's also a few people running as independents, but they won't have to participate in the primary. And like you said, I mean, there's a bunch of political donations flowing into the race. You have on the Democratic side, folks like Craig Greenberg, who has raised $1.4 million. His opponent, David Nicholson, raised just over 600,000. Even on the Republican side, where it's a slightly smaller field, you have folks like Jeffersontown Mayor Bill Dourif, who has raised nearly $400,000. You know, there are folks who are good at raising money, and that obviously gives them an advantage when they can buy, you know, a bunch of TV or radio ads. But I think the reason why this mayoral race is so hotly contested this year is because you also have a bunch of folks who have done work in the community, who are known as activists, who know how city government works, and who really, I guess, are otherwise qualified to run, which is not always the case in local elections. You got folks like Shamika Parrish Wright and Timothy Finley, both activists on the Democratic side, people like Chartrell Hall and Philip Molestina on the Republican side, faith leaders who have you know, these connections within the community. And I think if you ask them about, you know, the amount of money that's flowing into this race, the candidates sort of at the top for campaign finance donations, I mean, they would tell you, you know, they're activists, they have these ties to the communities, and what they're trying to do isn't really about the money, it's about building sort of grassroots support. So you're seeing a lot of, you know, door knocking campaigns. You're seeing folks who you know, are trying to are showing up to different community groups and those kind of meetings, and really trying to build that grassroots support to sort of, you know, give them the edge when you have other folks who are raising you know, pretty exorbitant amounts of money for a local election.
What do voters want to talk? What do they want to hear about from these candidates? What are some of the issues that they want to talk about? Obviously Louisville's been in the national spotlight given the protests that took place on the streets following the shooting of Breonna Taylor. We've dealt with the COVID pandemic and a lot of other issues as well. Equity issues, funding for people who live in West Louisville. But what do folks want to talk about that you've noticed in your coverage?
Yeah, so we actually did like an audience survey here at WFPL before we put together the our voter guide for the mayoral primary and the Metro Council primaries. And one of the things I think we heard a lot was this issue of racial justice. What are people doing to sort of heal the racial divide here in Louisville? What are they doing about, you know, the disparate access to resources in different communities across Louisville? You heard a lot about, you know, how are local governments, just like federal governments, thinking about the issue of climate change and what that's going to mean. But I think at the end of the day, and I think you identified this too, I mean, the biggest issue really that folks are talking about is public safety. I remember talking to a mayoral candidate, and they said, you know, if you don't have a plan for public safety, if that's not the number one issue that you're running on, then at this point, it's like, what are you doing? That's kind of how this election has felt. I think, you know, whether you're coming at it as a resident, as someone who thinks, you know, LMPD needs more resources, we need more police officers out on the street, or you're coming to it like some of the other candidates who are talking about, you know, increasing community resources, access to mental health resources, you know, boosting community centers and youth programming, trying to get at the sort of root of the gun violence issue. It doesn't matter really where you're coming at it from. Everybody's got a plan for how to tackle the rising gun violence. And, you know, we've seen record-breaking gun violence for the last 2 years in Louisville. And what we've seen so far is, you know, gun violence seems to be going down, but homicides are continuing at their pretty fast rate. So I think that's really been the sort of pivotal thing that everybody's talking about.
We are talking about the primary election and the various races on the ballot here on In Conversation on WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. That's Roberto Roldan, you just heard, who's the city reporter for WFPL. Also with us is Amina Lahey, the city editor, and Ryland Barton, who is from Kentucky Public Radio and Ohio Valley Resource, our former State House reporter and also a political reporter. Back to you for a moment, Roberto. I have to acknowledge that there was an incident in February on Valentine's Day. Craig Greenberg, who has been called by most the front runner on the Democratic side in the mayor's race, he was shot at. Apparently, one bullet did hit his clothing. He was not injured. A suspect was arrested, a young local activist by the name of Quintez Brown, who's also a journalist and a candidate for the Metro Council here in Louisville. Don't want to talk about the court case today, but obviously this incident has had a big impact on the campaign, especially the Greenberg campaign, and he has mentioned it in some of his advertising, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, there was an ad that came out. I think it was actually his first TV ad or one of the first that referenced the incident sort of very specifically. And I mean, that kind of got mixed reviews, but, you know, I think in political campaigns, especially one as contested as this one is, you know, people who aren't necessarily in favor of Craig Greenberg are going to see it sort of one way, perhaps taking advantage of this incident. And then folks who support Greenberg are going to see it as, you know, sort of brave that this is something that he was willing to kind of go out and talk about, you know, something that happened to him that might be sort of deeply personal or traumatic. But I think, you know, I think it hasn't necessarily influenced the kind of issues that are at the forefront of the race, only because this issue of gun violence in Louisville was already kind of at the forefront. So you saw Craig Greenberg after the incident happened say essentially that he was just basically going to double down on his plan, his public safety plan that he had released just, you know, maybe weeks or months before the incident occurred, which sort of tries to get at fully funding and fully staffing LMPD, but then also looking at some of these root causes. And I think you've just seen the other mayoral candidates do the same, sort of double down on the plans that they had already put out to try to, you know, decrease the temperature here in Louisville, get back to, you know, a more normal level of crime in the city and of gun violence in the city, and try to, you know, sort of tackle that at the root causes and build up resources.
A couple of minutes away from a break. Before we do that, I want to ask you, Roberto, about early voting. I believe there are six voting locations here in Jefferson County that are open for through tomorrow. What about folks? And there's a lot of concern now about because COVID cases are going up. Jefferson County just moved into the yellow or moderate medium category. So a lot of concerns about not being able to vote in person or otherwise not being able to for various other reasons. And I believe we have a cut with someone here, but what can people do if they're worried about COVID or they can't vote in person?
Yeah. So fortunately there is a way to vote in Kentucky. Even if you're stuck at home quarantining, I recently spoke with Aaron Huber, who's a spokesperson for the Jefferson County Clerk's Office. He said that the law essentially allows for accommodations for people with a medical emergency less than 2 weeks before an election.
Let's hear from Aaron.
So whether they get a COVID infection and have to quarantine, or perhaps they are dealing with a broken leg and they still want to vote, a voter can request an absentee ballot.
So Huber said in order to get that absentee ballot, a voter might have to employ the help of a family member to do it. You can send a close family member like a brother or sister, a parent or a child to the clerk's election center on East Liberty Street. They can pick up an absentee application on your behalf. Once you fill that out, you will have to get it notarized, which you can do at Metro Hall. But once you give in that application, they'll then give you an absentee ballot to fill out at home, which you can return back to the election center where they have a ballot drop box. So you don't even have to come into close contact with any of, you know, the elections workers that we have here in Louisville. It's not necessarily the easiest way to vote, but it is available to you if you have contracted COVID but still want to exercise your right to vote.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Amin Alahi about some of the Metro Council races in Louisville. Also, Christy Stevens from the Center for Neighborhoods in Louisville is going to tell us about a new voter information map. And Ryland Barton will join us to talk about the other various state and federal races going on in this primary election coming up officially on Tuesday. Back with more in a moment. This is In Conversation on WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. Welcome back to In Conversation on WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Rick Howlett in Louisville, and today we are previewing the primary election, which officially is on Tuesday, May 17th in Kentucky, but early in-person voting has begun. It began on Thursday and continues through Saturday across the state at designated locations. We have a panel of journalists here to talk about and preview the races. Amina Alahi, city editor at WFPL, Roberto Roldan, city politics and government reporter for WFPL, and Ryland Barton, managing editor for Collaboratives for Kentucky Public Radio and Ohio Valley Resource. And of course, you know Ryland from his previous reporting as the State House reporter for WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio, and also as a political reporter. We're going to talk to them in just a moment about the various races, but right now I want to bring in Christy Stevens. Christy is a geospatial analyst and developer with the Center for Neighborhoods, where they produce a map of the month. And this month, it's a voter information map. Christy, welcome to In Conversation. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Hi, Rick. Thanks a lot for having me.
Well, go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just going to say there was a lot of confusion around the redistricting. A lot of people's council districts changed and precincts changed. So we thought it would be a great idea to put this map out to help people figure out where to go to vote.
Well, tell us more about that. How does the map work?
Basically, it's an interactive map. You put your address in. It drills down through a map layer of precincts, which is correlated to your polling place. And then it retrieves that information and puts it in a nice panel on the side of the map. And then you can print that out. It also tells you if your council person is on the ballot, your state senator, your House of Representatives, and congressperson.
And, you know, your line of work seems, it is a spatial and very visual, but it's more than that as well. But what's your approach to using maps to kind of tease out stories about actual people and communities? And tell us more about overall the map of the month that you have at the center.
Well, what we do is try to put information out there that helps people understand their neighborhoods, because we believe that understanding precedes action. And that's our goal, is community engagement and empowering neighbors to make positive changes in their communities. So a lot of the maps we do show things like environmental impacts to neighborhoods, health indicators. We also tell stories. For example, during Women's History Month, we did a map of women of historical note across the state. They're great tools for empowering action and for telling stories.
And where can people find the map and your other monthly maps?
You can go to centerforneighborhoods.org, click on menu, and then click on maps, and you'll see lots and lots of different thematic maps.
That's go ahead.
We also do mapping for other nonprofits for a small fee. So things like community ministries, we host a map for them so folks can put their address in and find out who they're community ministry is.
Very good. Sounds like a very useful tool, and hope folks will check it out. Christy Stevens from the Center for Neighborhoods here in the Louisville Metro, thanks for dropping in to join us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Rick.
This is In Conversation on WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. We're talking about the election, the primary election across Kentucky coming up on Tuesday, officially Tuesday, May 17th, but their early voting has begun across the state. We're talking with our panel of journalists about it. Roberto Roldan is with us. He is a city politics and government reporter for WFPL. And Ryland Barton is with us from Kentucky Public Radio and the Ohio Valley Resource. And we'll join him in a moment to talk about some of the statewide and federal races. But right now, I want to bring in Amina Elahi, city editor at WFPL, and talk a little bit about the Metro Council elections. Amina, there are 26 Metro Council seats now in Louisville. So it's been that way since the merger of the city and county in 2003. This is a year, and the elections for those seats are odd and even numbered. They don't do them all in one year, right?
That's exactly right. As you mentioned, there are 26 seats, and they span, you know, all the way across the Louisville Metro, Jefferson County. Every 4 years, half of the seats are up. So this year it is all the odd numbered seats. In 2024, it'll be all the even numbered seats. And so every 4 years, we have an opportunity to essentially reshape the Metro Council, as well as see, you know, how the party balance changes and how the, you know, how many incumbents retain their seats.
And there are some contested, not every seat is contested this year, right? But there are some contested races.
That's right. There are about half of the 13 seats that are up for election are contested this year. In fact, there are 8 Metro Council members who are running for re-election, but only 2 of them are actually facing a challenger in the primary on Tuesday, May 17th. Excuse me. One of them is in District 3. The incumbent is Democrat Keisha Dorsey. She's facing Gibran Crook, who is a local basketball coach. And then in District 5, we have another Democrat, Donna Purvis, who has 2 primary challengers. One is a retired LMPD officer. His name is Ray Barker. He goes by Sir Friendly. And there's another who's a paralegal named Sherlina Watkins. There are some other Metro Council members who are up for election, who, as I mentioned, don't have challengers. So they will get through the primary just fine, but they may have someone you know, who could fight them for the seat in November's general election.
And Christy Stevens mentioned redistricting. There's some confusion that she's experienced on the city level. Has that been disruptive at all? I know there was at least one candidate who thought she had spent enough time in the right district, but has been disqualified.
Yes, the redistricting issue has created some interesting situations. I'll try to explain the one that you just alluded to as succinctly as I can. But there was a candidate for District 1 who had lived at her address for 15 years. And late last year, when the new district maps were finalized by Metro Council, that comes after the census that's done every 10 years, it turned out that the address she had lived at for 15 years was no longer considered to be in District 1. So after some time, she, you know, pursued a new rental home and moved into the new District 1, filed to run as a candidate for District 1, and recently faced a legal challenge from one of her primary competitors, and a judge disqualified her. This is an unusual situation because, you know, technically she had met the legal requirement of having to live in a district for at least a year in order to represent it, except that then the district boundaries changed. So she, you know, she says that she was trying to essentially like retain residency in District 1, but she didn't move before the boundary lines changed. It's kind of hard to pick up and move if you don't know that you're going to need to. So there's probably some of that involved there. There's another candidate that we identified for District 15 who, you know, if you look at her address on the map before redistricting, she was right inside the district and now she's right outside it. She is still on the ballot as far as we know because you can't be disqualified or removed unless someone, you know, files with the court to have you removed. So a judge would have to rule on that. So yeah, it's a complicated thing. There might be voters out there who are wondering which district they're in. So I think a good resource for them would be our voter guide. If you go to WFPL.org, there's a link to it right up top that says Louisville Votes. If you click on that, we have links to guides for the contested Metro Council races. Those include a little graphic map of, you know, the sort of the footprint of the district. But if you want to go even further and see if your specific address is in the district you think it's in, we also have a link to Logic Maps. That's LOJIC. That's in included in our main voter guide page. And when you go to that tool, you can insert your address. And it'll tell you which who your current council member is and which district you're in. So for anyone who's a little confused about who they should be voting for, that might be a useful tool.
And there's lots of information. I'm glad you brought that up, Amma. There's lots of information on the guide about all the other races, many of the other races across Kentucky. So if you don't live in Louisville, the guide is useful to you outside of the metro as well. And that brings us to a good segue to Ryland Barton, who will talk now about some of the state and federal races that are on the ballot. And before we go to Ryland, I want to play this cut that Stu Johnson sent us from WEKU. He talked to some voters in Lexington yesterday about the early voting. Early in-person voting is now available in Kentucky without an excuse. 3 days of voting continues through Saturday. And here's what some of the voters that Stu caught up with had to say.
It was very easy. It was convenient. It went very quickly.
I think anything that encourages more people to vote, so I wanted to support the early voting and get out here and make sure I got it done.
I'm going out of town beginning Tuesday, so I was going to miss the date. I just realized it, so this was very good. I wanted to vote.
Three voters yesterday in Lexington who caught up, Stu Johnson of member station WEKU caught up with yesterday in Fayette County. So, Ryland, are election officials hoping that, because primary election turnout is usually abysmal, or it has been, you know, in recent years, depending on the races, of course, but do election officials hope that the early voting, early in-person voting without an excuse will help boost turnout?
Yeah, they definitely hope that. And we will just have to kind of see this year and really in the coming years whether this reform has that effect. Granted, this is it's not a real huge expansion of access to voting. It's just adding 3 days in which people can go to, you know, somewhat centralized locations. Most counties just have one place where you can cast a ballot early, but it's on the Thursday, Friday, and Saturday ahead of the normal Tuesday election day. So there's another chance later today until 6 o'clock and tomorrow to vote early. Here in Jefferson County, as we were talking about earlier, there are six different voting locations where you can go. Doesn't matter what your precinct is for those for voting early in those spots. But then it also there's that traditional voting in person on Tuesday that everybody can take part in from 6 o'clock in the morning until 6 o'clock in the evening. It's got to be at your traditional polling location. But yeah, we'll see if this is something that people notice or catch on to. You know, even in 2020, which is a little bit of an odd year, but that was the year when there was a huge expansion of access to voting across the state. Anybody could cast ballots in by mail, absentee. There was a lot more early voting. Granted, this was in the middle of the pandemic, so everything was a little weird. But turnout that year, when there's so much energy, this was during the, you know, during the racial justice protests, especially in Louisville, but statewide, voter turnout that year was 31%. I believe in Jefferson County in 2020 in the primary, it was 36%. And that was actually pretty good for a primary election. Everybody wants there to be more people to show up to the polls. This is the crux of every political argument that anybody has that you should talk to. How do you get more people interested in politics? How do you get more people to vote? This is just a little thing that Kentucky has done to try and expand access. But we'll see if people catch on. We'll see if people even notice.
You're listening to In Conversation on WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. We're talking about the primary election across Kentucky, which officially is a Tuesday, but early voting, as we just were just talking about with Ryland Barton, is underway. Well, Ryland, state lawmakers redrew the congressional and state legislative districts. It's, of course, been challenged. This is a Republican legislature that did this with a supermajority, vetoed by Governor Beshear, overridden by the legislature, now being challenged in court. But for this election, those redrawn districts will be in effect, right?
Yes, they will. And it looks like they're going to be in effect for the fall as well, that this the understanding is that this is probably going to be staying in place and for November as well. So the big changes here are, you know, most of the congressional districts stayed pretty similar, with the exception of the Western Kentucky district, which folks might remember has been redrawn to extend all the way up into central Kentucky into Frankfort. So that extends like 350 miles from the westernmost tip of Kentucky up into Frankfort. But the Louisville area congressional districts is pretty much the same, and there's slight changes to the other ones as well. The whole point of extending that first district up was to take Frankfort out of the sixth district. Well, I should say the political point of it, which makes that that sixth congressional district in central Kentucky a little less competitive. It makes it a little bit more of a little bit easier for a Republican to get elected there by taking Frankfort, which is or Franklin County, rather, a Democratic leaning area out of there. And then the other effect of all of this is, there are big changes in the legislative maps, which are also being challenged in court, or one of them is the House map. And this is something that happens every 10 years. And as you know, we've talked about on here before, the you know, what happens is politicians end up, you know, kind of cutting up more densely populated urban areas, tying them, connecting to them to districts that are largely rural around them. Part of this is kind of a mathematical necessity, but it is definitely also done to kind of preserve you know, incumbents who are currently in office and to benefit the political party that is in power. This is something that Democrats did when they were in control of the legislature, and this is something that Republicans are doing now that they're in control of the legislature. There's some effects of that, you know, in Louisville, that a couple incumbent legislators were drawn into the same districts, and they that's actually led to a couple of them deciding to not run for re-election. Joni Jenkins, who is the minority leader of the State House of Representatives, she decided to not run again because her district was drawn to be a majority minority district, and she wanted to give a minority candidate the chance to a better chance at getting elected there. Longtime Representative Mary Lou Marzian was drawn into a district with another incumbent Democrat. She decided to not run for re-election. Mackenzie Cantrell, she decided to not run for re-election because she was likewise drawn in with another Democrat. So she decided to run for a judgeship in Louisville. So, or actually a circuit appeals judgeship, mm-hmm. I believe. So there's, you know, this is kind of the how it plays out every 10 years. There's a little bit of a reshuffling of the deck. And we'll see how this turns out, but it looks like Republicans are very likely to build upon their already massive majorities in the legislature. They currently have 75 out of 100 seats in the House, 30 out of 38 seats in the in the Senate. And they will likely build upon that. And you know, there's a few interesting races around the state as well.
Yeah, I was just reading, looking at an AP story here about some Republican lawmakers are going to be running against each other. Jim Gooch and Lynn, is it Beckler? Is it pronounced
Lynn
that right?
Beckler, yeah, out in Western Kentucky, two incumbent Republicans. And then in Eastern Kentucky, Bobby McCool and Nirma Kirk McCormick were drawn into the same district, so they'll have to duke it out there.
So we'll see what happens. And again, the redistricting the challenge, the court challenge is still in play, and there won't be a decision on that anytime.
Yeah, it's ongoing. It's being heard right now in Franklin Circuit. Like most of these sorts of lawsuits, we generally expect that they will be resolved at the state Supreme Court. So we kind of have probably a few months ahead of us before we get any resolution on this issue. But, you know, there is some precedence for, you know, these sorts of lawsuits being successful. It's not a one-for-one comparison, but again, back when Democrats were in control in Kentucky, Republicans challenged the maps. It actually led to this series of you know, maps getting struck down, needing to redraw maps, and it took about another year and a half to finalize things. And people ended up just, candidates ended up just running on the old maps for a year until things got changed back around. So we'll see if that happens. What Democrats are trying to do is they're challenging the constitutionality of these, saying it's gerrymandering is limiting access to the polls.
We're going to take a break, and we'll be back to talk much more about the primary election in Kentucky, and we'll talk about some of the federal races, U.S. Senate races, congressional races with Ryland Barton. After a break, this is In Conversation on WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio.
Support for LPM Podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
Welcome back to In Conversation on WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Rick Howlett in Louisville, and we are previewing the primary election in Kentucky, which officially takes place on Tuesday, May 17th. Early voting is underway across the state at designated locations, and you can check with your county clerk's office or voter registration office to find out more about that if you do want to vote early. We're talking with Ryland Barton about some of the state legislative and federal races that are on the ballot this year. And Ryland, let's talk a little bit about the U.S. Senate race, the seat now held by Republican Rand Paul. Charles Booker, former state representative from Louisville, has emerged as apparently the leading Democrat. His profile really went up during the racial justice protest here in Louisville back in 2020. But he has mounted a Democratic campaign, a progressive campaign against Paul. And I know a lot of the national observers say he has an uphill battle if he wins the nomination.
Yeah, I mean, any Democrat running for a statewide race in Kentucky has a big uphill battle. The one exception, it's not an exception. Andy Beshear, narrowly won re-election or won election in 2019 by just about 5,000 votes over a very unpopular governor, Matt Bevin. It's like that's, at this point, that's kind of the one game plan or the one example of how to run a statewide race in Kentucky as a Democrat right now. Booker, as you said, he really rose to prominence in 2020. He was a state rep, and during those racial justice protests, he was everywhere, and he had caught lightning in a bottle, was making great speeches, and it really prompted. He caught up a lot of ground in that Democratic primary, narrowly losing to Amy McGrath in that race. So he's back at it again to try and run for Senate. It looks like he will very likely get the nomination after this primary election. He's outraised his Democratic opponents. He's been out there more. He's got more name recognition. Same deal on the other side with Rand Paul, who has a much larger war chest at this point than Booker does, and is running against some candidates who have not really been campaigning very loudly or seriously. So we're expecting not to really be surprised in this primary election in those particular races, but we'll see. And we're just kind of looking ahead to what this Rand Paul, Charles Booker race is going to be like this year. I'm very interested to see how this is going to roll out. It's both of these candidates are they're good on the microphone, they're good in debates. It would be very interesting to see them debate, and it'll be very interesting to see if and when Charles Booker does get the nomination here. This is really one of the few times that a truly progressive Democrat has run a statewide election in Kentucky. And this is something that progressives have really been pushing for. They say that statewide candidates are too moderate. And so we're going to see, we're going to see what that's like. We're going to see if they can put their money where their mouth is and run a big statewide campaign and build that coalition. So, it'll be interesting to see these results and see how the race rolls out.
Well, a few months ago, Democrat John Yarmuth, who's been representing Louisville, the 3rd District, which covers Louisville, a highly Democratic district, announced his retirement after, I believe, 17 years or so in office. So that has generated a competitive race on the Democratic side. For his successor, we have two state lawmakers, Attica Scott on the House side and State Senator Morgan McGarvey, both of Louisville, who are running. And Yarmuth has endorsed Senator McGarvey, correct?
That's right. And both Scott and McGarvey have spent about a decade in Louisville politics. McGarvey is an attorney. Scott is a community organizer of Scott was also a Metro Council person before she ran for the legislature. She was actually the sponsor of the ordinance to raise the minimum wage in Louisville, which actually was struck down by the Kentucky Supreme Court. Within a year later, saying that local jurisdictions aren't allowed to raise their minimum wage over the state's rate. They have been in the minority for the entirety of their careers in the legislature. They both argue, that they are the one who wields their political power more effectively. McGarvey has been the one, he's been in leadership. He's been the Senate minority leader and been somebody who's, gotten a few of his own bills passed. He's been pushing for things in the state budget. He's been as the minority leader, you just kind of end up being the person who gets up and stands up and speaks against, whatever the majority is generally pushing through. Atticus Scott is somebody who is really prominent in kind of the community movement, and especially the protest movement in Louisville. She's somebody that's been, very vocal sponsoring principled bills that have not made it through the legislature, although parts of her bills have made into other bills. She's famously sponsored the ban on no-knock warrants in Kentucky, which didn't end up getting taken up. Republicans actually ended up spending or sponsoring their own version, but incorporated certainly parts of the things that Representative Scott was pushing for. It's an interesting race. And I think that going into this, again, it's another one of these races. I'm really just kind of interested to see how this plays out on election day. Cause I imagine that going into this, they probably had pretty similar name recognition across the district. McGarvey has outraised Scott just hand over fist in this, and he's been really pumping ads through TV waves. So I imagine he's getting in a lot of eyeballs and attention right now because of that. But Atticus Scott's also got a big coalition of people out there knocking on doors and pushing her name out there, and we will see who ends up the victor in this next week.
Well, she raised, Atticus Scott raised some eyebrows when she declared her candidacy before Congressman Yarmuth announced that he would retire, right? And then when he did announce his retirement, a few minutes later, Morgan McGarvey announced his candidacy for that seat.
Right. That's been kind of the palace intrigue side of this story. Scott had talked to Congressman Yarmuth saying, asking if he was going to run again. He said he would. And then she decided that she was going to run anyway. Supposedly Congressman Yarmuth was not a fan of that move. And Morgan McGarvey got a little bit of a heads up that he was going to, that Yarmuth was going to announce his retirement later. So he announced his candidacy just, I guess it was within hours after, or very shortly after Congressman Yarmuth announced his retirement, got a big head start on the fundraising there. But then again, Representative Scott had already been in the race for quite a while. McGarvey's lined up a lot more of that kind of institutional support from unions, a lot of sitting state legislators, public officials, folks like that. And so he's really, and that's enabled him to build this big, campaign war chest already. And important to mention that Democrats outnumber Republicans 2-1 in the Louisville area, or in the 3rd congressional district. So whoever wins this is going to have a big leg up going into the general election. Although, with no incumbent on the ballot, it's an open election. So the crazy things can happen in those sorts of races.
Well, let's hear a cut from because Representative Scott and Senator McGarvey have been debating at several various venues over the past few weeks. Just the other day, they spoke at the Louisville Forum, and this is Representative Scott talking about saying that she would not be afraid to stand up to her fellow Democrats if elected.
I don't think you would want someone who's going to go along to get along. And then you end up looking back and saying, maybe we should have listened to them.
And then Senator McGarvey touted his experience in getting things done in a legislature dominated by Republicans.
I'm the Democratic leader of the state Senate. I got that position when Matt Bevin was governor. I have taken on and led every fight against a conservative supermajority Republican legislature since being in office.
State Senator Morgan McGarvey. I want to thank our new State House reporter, Divya Karthikeyan, for gathering that sound for us as well. While we're talking about congressional races, Ryland, John Yarmuth, the only Democrat in Kentucky's 6-member congressional delegation, are any of the Republican incumbents facing serious challenges this time around?
In the primary race, it doesn't look like there's anything too... there aren't going to be too tight of races going on. one note on this, President Donald Trump did come out, former President Trump came out and endorsed all five of Kentucky's Republican Congress people in this race. One of the, I think the surprising part about that is that it included Thomas Massie, the Northern Kentucky congressman, who he's butted heads with everybody, including the former president. At one point, Trump had called him a third-rate grandstander for, I believe that's when he held up one of the coronavirus relief packages really early on in the pandemic. But yeah, it doesn't look like any of those races are going to be too tight in these primary elections.
Well, I can't not acknowledge the developments this week in the 2023 governor's race, because the Attorney General of Kentucky, Republican Daniel Cameron, has announced, expected by many, I think, that he will run for the governor's office next year. And he released a campaign or an announcement video this week. Let's hear some of that.
Andy Beshear is not uniting Kentucky. This governor does not reflect our values. He's never going to change, so we have to change our governor. I'm Daniel Cameron. I grew up in E-Town, just up the road from here, surrounded by good people. My parents owned a coffee shop. They worked hard and insisted I work hard, too. Mackenzie and I believe Kentucky needs a governor who uses common sense, one bold enough to defend innocent life, a governor who understands that only faith can keep us strong.
Well, Ryland, there are a number of other Republicans, high-profile Republicans, seeking the governor's office who have already announced, but Attorney General Cameron going straight for Governor Beshear in that announcement.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were, I mean, General Cameron had been, he'd been kind of hinting at this over the last couple weeks, but I think that came as a surprise to a lot of people. He is a first term attorney general. This is his first position in elected office. Everybody figured he would kind of run for re-election or possibly wait for a U.S. Senate seat to come open someday. He is an old McConnell protege, and many had speculated that he would try to, you know, wait around for that to happen and follow in McConnell's footsteps. However, you know, it's as he announced this, and it's you can kind of see how this is shaking up the race and shaking up all statewide elections for next year. You know, he's already got this kind of campaign infrastructure built and a bit of support built. And if you look back to the 2019 election, you know, Cameron actually netted way more votes in that election than Matt Bevin did. And that's the whole thing Republicans are still looking back on in that race is, you know, like, should we have run an unpopular incumbent again? And when there are other people who, you know, maybe could have beat an Andy Beshear. But this is a different year. It's a different race. Andy Beshear is the incumbent now. He's got hundreds of statewide press conferences under his belt. If there were people who didn't know who he was in 2019, I bet that just about all of them know who he is now. Republicans are running on this. They're going to be running against Beshear's COVID policies, saying that he was the reason that, you know, we felt so much pain in 2020 and 2021 because of his coronavirus restrictions. But I don't know. We're going to see if that sticks. Beshear still has a pretty high approval rating. There's been polling over the last couple months showing him with around a 60% job approval rating. Granted, this is a year and a half out from that election. So a lot of things can change between now and then. People could feel a lot differently. There's going to be, you know, just hours upon hours of attack ads launched against him as well. But yes, yeah, so there's other candidates in this race. Agriculture Commissioner Ryan Quarles, who's another one of the governor's chief critics, announced last month. Former state or current state auditor Mike Harmon, he was the first one to get into the Republican side of the race. And he got in last year, and we're still waiting to see if a couple others might get in. Former UN ambassador under Donald Trump, Kelly Knightcraft, who is a Kentuckian originally from Glasgow. She's a prolific Republican fundraiser, married to coal magnate Joe Kraft. She's been strongly hinting at a run for governor, and she likewise has a big political network that she would be able to tap. So we're kind of waiting to see if that'll happen. Last week, she was at the Derby and, you know, made an appearance with the former President Trump at the Derby. So it's she's kind of got that behind her as well. So it's going to be an interesting race. Could become a pretty crowded primary on the Republican side.
Well, Governor Beshear had one of those many press conferences yesterday, and he was asked about the field that is growing on the Republican side that one of them hopes to unseat him. Didn't really say much about that, but said right now he's focused on being governor. Let's hear from him.
And whether that's being willing to make the tough decisions to keep families safe through COVID, and sometimes making unpopular decisions because they're the right ones to make, or whether it is leading our Commonwealth through the greatest time of economic development in our history, my goal is to leave the state better for my kids and ultimately someday their kids. I believe that if you work hard and you find success as governor, then the people of Kentucky see it. So while others can get out there and play the politics and do whatever's going to happen in a primary, and my goal is just every day to be the very best governor that I can be.
One thing he did talk about in detail yesterday, Ryland, was this ethics complaint that's been filed by the Democratic Party against Daniel Cameron, claiming that as attorney general, if you've been investigating, if you've launched any investigation of the sitting governor, you can't run against him or her.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting because I wrote a story about that back in 2017 or whatever when Beshear was kind of inquiring about a similar situation. But yeah, there are ethics rulings in which a sitting attorney general can't investigate a sitting governor if that attorney general might challenge that governor in an election on down the road. So just to give some backstory on that. So back in 2017, this was back when former Governor Bevin was, he had bought a house from a political donor and appointee. There's questions about whether he'd gotten a really sweet deal on that and if there was some corruption involved there. Everybody was wondering if Beshear would investigate. And Beshear actually asked the Ethics Commission if he could. The Ethics Commission said, no, if you ever plan to run for governor. So there's some precedent to this, and there's precedent before that as well. I'm interested to see what they say about this. This is one of those kinds of, inside baseball Kentucky politics legal rulings, but it certainly sets the contours of how, who gets to run for office and what they can do when they're in office. So we'll see how that turns out. Cameron's campaign has, just kind of dismissed the complaint on its face, just calling it a joke and saying that it's an act of desperation.
I've got about 30 seconds left, and I'm just curious, does this carry the weight of law? If he's found to violate the ethics code, can he just carry on?
I don't know how that works. I don't know how it happens if he he's found in violation of that. But I will find the answer for you, Rick.
We'll wait for that. And thank you to Ryland Barton, and thanks to all of our guests, Amina Alahi and Roberto Rodan, and also thanks to our guest from the Christy Stevens from the Center for Neighborhoods in Louisville. And thank you for joining us. I want to thank our In Conversation production team as well, Michelle Tyrene Johnson, Laura Ellis, Brad Yost, and Russell Wells. Special thanks today to Charles Spivey for his help getting our guest on the air. Bill Burton hosts our local newscast, and our opening and closing theme was composed by Kojin Toshiro. I'm Rick Howlett. Thanks for listening.